Thing, huh?
Yeah.
One, two. Welcome to Comedians Talking Baseball, our weekly MLB recap. For myself, comedian Joe Kilgallen, along with comedian Mike Bridenstine, break down the week that was, nerd on some stats, get into the history of the game, damn it, and just have a good time with you. How you doing, Brido?
Good, man. How are you?
I am wonderful. As much been a bummer that our Cubs got eliminated so early. It's been a far. As long as baseball is on the airwaves, I'm still a happy boy. So let's get into it. I found this very funny. Let's start off with this. If the Milwaukee Brewers win game one tonight against the LA Dodgers, the whole state of Wisconsin gets free hamburgers.
That is exciting.
Yeah, and can you think of a state that could use free hamburgers less than the state of Wisconsin? I'm coming out swinging, damn it. I ain't over it. I'm not over the Brewers taking that NL Central. Have some more burgers, you fatty fat fats, huh? All right, I'm sorry.
Brewer fans are a few, and all of the Brewer fans I know, and I could be wrong. I mean, hey, maybe all of the games I've seen at Miller Park aren't just mostly Cubs fans, you know? Maybe there's fucking Brewers fans who aren't. Wait, we're good? Oh, I need to get a Brewers hat type of fans. I don't know. One time I was talking shit about the Brewers, or I got into a discussion about baseball with a friend of mine from Wisconsin, and I was like, you guys haven't even won. And he's like, yeah, we did, with like Hank Aaron and Eddie Matthews. And I was just like, I was like, come on. And all of those Braves players are in their Hall of Fame, like the team Hall of Fame. They have no identity.
It's a different franchise.
That franchise still exists.
Yeah, that's why it doesn't count. I'm telling you, listen. Hey, I know I came off with the obvious Wisconsin, you're overweight joke. Not that people in Illinois are that thin. I'm going to give you guys some credit. Brewers. Ballpark. Milwaukee's a very fun town. As a matter of fact, I've had a lot of fun in most of Wisconsin. Not all, but most. Madison. Love you, babe. Appleton, here's a wink sending your way. But let's not pretend like you guys are the best baseball fans, okay? You're not, and I get that, okay? It's more of a football state. The Brewers have broken your heart a few times. They're kind of up and down. The Milwaukee Bucks haven't done much since you had Kareem. Are you talking about – is it Nate Craig? Is that the friend of ours you're talking about?
Nate Craig, yep.
Because Nate Craig is the second most famous Brewers fan now that he's on a Netflix show. Which, congrats to Nate Craig, if you're listening. I love you, man.
I was at Nate's album recording. It was fantastic. He has jokes I'm angry I didn't think of. He's a great dude. However.
No, he's super underrated as a stand-up, for sure. I think he's awesome, but I feel like he should be bigger.
He opens for Bill Burr. Not a bad comic there.
Oh, no. Yeah, he opens for Bill Burr, who's arguably the best on the planet right now, many would say. I would, at least.
Yeah.
But my point is, I always felt like Nate, he still doesn't have representation, though, last time I checked. He still kind of gets overlooked for things, I feel.
No,
like.
He negotiated.
That's what happens.
He negotiated that Netflix deal himself.
Yeah, that's correct. I know. He's on five episodes of a Netflix show that's starring and executive produced by Jonah Hill and Emma Stone. So that's incredible to do. Like, no, the dude's a hustler. He works hard. I love the guy. Hockey expert, baseball. No.
No, he has made fun of me because he doesn't think baseball is a real sport. So do I think that the Brewers deserve anything? No.
No. And Cato Kalen's their other main, more famous fan, as I was going to bring up.
Is that right?
Cato Kalen is a diehard Brewers fan. I'm not kidding you.
I've also done stand-up with Cato Kalen.
I know, dude. You just know the only two big famous Brewers fans. I'm sure there's got to be some other famous Brewers fans out there. If you're a Brewers fan and you're like, hey, man, we've got this person, this person, this person, tweet it at us, Facebook us, Instagram, whatever the hell you want. Tell us where we're wrong. But I know Cato Kalen is a diehard Brewer fan because I follow someone on Twitter who would retweet him and laugh about it, going, this dude is obsessed. It's hysterical. Or he would just go off like, Craig Council, you effing moron. I swear I'm done with this team. Why are you always doing, like, you know, he literally,
Cato Kalen.
Norm MacDonald used to annoyingly tweet about golf. Cato Kalen tweets about the Milwaukee Brewers.
That's
crazy,
I
right?
I had never heard that. I met Cato Kalen at MI's Westside Comedy Theater. like a few years ago. Every now and then in LA, you meet somebody or you run into somebody and it's like fucking meeting the Joker from Batman or something, like Jack Nicholson in full Joker. Like, it's like, holy shit. You know what I mean?
No, it's bizarre. LA was weird like that, where you're like, you meet people where you're like, there's no, in what world do I know you?
Right.
You know?
Right.
How is this a thing? How am I talking to Cato Kaelin, the dude who was just OJ Simpson's, yeah, you can crash in my house, like, guy?
It's insane.
Weird, right?
Yeah. It's.
I can think of some examples. I just can't think of any off the top of my head right now. But I know I had a few of those in LA where I'm like, okay. You know, it was weird that one party we went to, Eric Andre's housewarming party. Remember he had that drum kit? It was a great party. A lot of people were mostly outside. He has that drum kit. And I was like, hey, can I mess around on this? And he's like, you know how to play the drums? I'm like, no, not really. I could play like one or two beats, but, you know, I like them. And he's like, yeah, sure, go ahead. I don't care. And because other people were playing them. So I'm just playing like this one or two little simple beats I knew. And then this woman sits at the piano and says, keep going with that beat, and starts playing the piano along with it. And it was the woman who played Maybe on Arrested Development.
Yeah. She's got a new show.
Yeah, you remember that party.
Yeah.
No, she's on a couple of new shows, because I know the one show, my dad's, I haven't seen one episode of it, but my dad loves it, Search Party. Guy raves about that show.
Lil Rel was there. He's got a new show.
Yeah, Gerard Carmichael was at that. No, it was a great party. Star-studded. I mean, Eric Andre. But I remember that wasn't – you've seen Lil Rel. You know, I used to do shows with him in Chicago all the time. Great dude. But to see – I was watching Arrested Development when it was actually on TV. I was one of those people who later was like, I got the DVDs of this show. It's great. You know?
Yeah.
I was there from the beginning. And I – you know, so that was weird. Because, you know, I was a fan of that. Her character was great. She was great. So I remember just being like, am I playing the drum? Am I doing a music duet with Maybe Funke right now? This is weird. So,
there's
super nice. Just, you know, we all hung out afterwards. But obviously, seeing all those big comedians wasn't weird to me. I'm in that world.
Brian Dunkelman from American Idol, he does shows out here.
That's bizarre, too. It's weird how many people could get into comedy because they're like, I kind of have a name. You're Dustin Diamonds of the world. You're the guy, man, there's been some bad people where you're like, you are not a stand up comedian. Why are you doing this? And it's like, well, I was on a reality show for 3 years, and my agent said people might recognize my name. So now I get to go to towns like Springfield, Illinois, and try to sell out some sort of BFW.
Well, I mean, Christina Pajitsky and Theo Von are two of the biggest comics in the country. And they were on.
Yeah, but to be fair, though, those two put in the work.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they, like, you know, I know I'm friends with Theo, so obviously I have some bias, but I think he kind of got a bad rap when he first started stand-up as being this dude that, oh, you're taking your Road Rules fame and turning it into stand-up, when he always wanted to be a stand-up. He just happened, one of his buddies was like, you should go after Road Rules, and then they made a silly video and he got it. But he was still that dude. I saw him all the time in L.A. when I was at shows. Like, you know, he was at the clubs all the time and some of the other, like, you know, he wasn't hitting the alt rooms, but I'd see him at some of the clubby indie rooms, you know what I mean?
Oh, I've done like shows with him in Orange County that I thought, like, bar shows, where I thought,
yeah, bar shows, you too.
I thought,
like, conchos in Manhattan Beach.
Yeah, I was like, this show is horrible. The crowd is dead. They're not even listening. Everyone is bombing. And then, like, Theo Von, who I thought, like, was just like a television personality, went up and absolutely, like, destroyed. And I was like, okay, I'm taking him seriously now.
Yeah, he's a sweetheart. He does this new thing on the road because his podcast has blown up so much. His podcast gets, like, I think he said something to me, he gets like 600,000 downloads a week. I don't even know. Why do people still call them downloads, though? Because I listen to podcasts, but I'm not technically downloading them. I'm just listening. I'm just, you know, I got the app and I hit play. It's not technically downloads. Anyway, though, listens or plays, whatever you want to call them, downloads, sure. And so he's selling out a lot. So he does this thing where they, I don't know how he goes about finding them, but he says, submit yourself. And if you're like, he takes like single moms out to dinner and stuff like that. And then he'll post a picture here of me with the four single moms I selected. And they're like, you know, takes them out to dinner or gives them gift certificates to movies or something like that. It's kind of a cool thing to get back, you know?
Huh.
Yeah. What? Are you standing next to a fan right now?
No, I'm tethered to a wall because I'm charging my phone.
Okay, that was in the air just started going, it felt like. But anyway, all right, let's get back to sports, though. So the Brewers are playing the Dodgers tonight. You got that going on. The burger thing I think is funny. It's from the George Webb restaurant chain because if the Brewers win tonight, it'll be 12 games in a row. And at any point, if the Brewers win 12 games in a row during the season, any season, this starts way back like 50 years ago, I think I was reading. I don't have the article in front of me, though. The chain gives away free, like, cheeseburgers or burgers or whatever the hell it is. And I don't know. So that's kind of a cool little thing there. Another thing I wanted to talk about before actually getting into the game. And by the way, everybody, if you're listening for the very first time, we do recap what's going on in Major League Baseball. But a lot of the podcast, I'd say almost 75% of it, is conversation about where the game is going, where the game was. We talk a lot about the history of the game. We get into, like, statistics. We've had arguments about should a pitcher ever win an MVP award. Things like that. You know, what statistics qualify someone for winning each award and everything like that. Dude, it's brutal right now. Why is this terrible?
It sounds fine on my end.
Maybe it's just my end. I'm sorry, everyone. Maybe it's just mine. Bryden signs in L.A. I'm in Chicago, so sometimes we have a little issue here and there. But it's been getting better, I feel like, from April till now. Anyway, so here's something. Major League Baseball, I shared this with you guys. We probably should have talked about it last week. This is what I was so excited about this, and I'm hopeful. Hopefully this is a sign that next year baseball is finally going to promote themselves the correct way. They had a commercial in which it shows, like, Stanton hit a home run and then they celebrate. It showed, like, a bunch of bat flips. It showed Javi Baez doing his badass slides and getting all pumped up. It just showed, like, all the fun players in baseball, you know, having fun. And then it said, and there's a voiceover during it. You're hearing a narrator saying, they said not to do this. They said not to do that. They said not to do that. And then it starts to show the person, like, they do a cool little camera trick, and he goes, well, enough talk, let the kids play. And then it's a guy with a backwards hat on, and it's revealed to be Ken Griffey Jr., the kid. And I'm like, hell yes. I got so pumped watching that commercial just for their October postseason time, baby, commercial, that I thought, oh my God, imagine if they did that stuff all year round, having commercials where we celebrate the players who are having fun. We celebrate that, you know, get rid of that stupid bullshit culture of, oh, there's a right and a wrong way to play a game. Which, look, obviously there's some things, you know, I don't want to see a guy hit a home run and then turn around to the catcher and start doing the suck it. I don't want to do that stuff.
I do.
But unless the catcher's talking trash. If the catcher's talking some major trash, that's fine. But, you know, I'm okay with Pedro Strop and Carl Edwards Jr. and not just Cubs, but Fernando Rodney and other closers who get pumped up when, or relief pitchers when they make a big strikeout. I'm all right with that. And I'm also all right with a guy watching a home run. But I'm also okay with if you're a pitcher and you're like, fuck this guy and you want to hit him in the hip, I'm also okay with that. Because that's part of the game too. You know what I mean? I'm weird like that because some people are like, no, you shouldn't hit a guy for celebrating. I go, no, fuck it, hit him. Do whatever you want. It's baseball. Don't hit it. Don't throw it in his head. That's bullshit. But if you want to put a guy on first base because you couldn't mentally handle him celebrating, then be a little bitch and put him on first base.
David.
That's
David Bodie apologizing for his mini bat flip on a walk-off grand slam tells you that there's something wrong with that mindset. You just did something incredible. And you should.
You know what, though? It's not. I don't mean to cut you off there, but I think I meant to tell you guys this at the time because that annoyed the way that was shown made it seem like David Bodie came out going, I'm really sorry. I feel terrible about that. That wasn't what it was. Bodie, because you saw it in tweet form. I actually heard the interview live on the radio in Chicago. It was on a local station in Chicago. And they asked David Bodie about the bat flip. And he goes, oh, I don't. Yeah, I mean, it was a little too much for some people. You know, I'm sorry, I guess. I don't know. I was just having fun. Like, he didn't. I don't think he was saying he was sorry, like, oh, my God, I should never do that. I think he meant, like, oh, sorry, you feel that way. But really, can we just move on to the next? It was like a 20-minute interview they had him on the radio. And that was, like, 8 seconds. And I think his apologizing was more the question, the way the question was shaped from the interviewer, where he was like, did you feel bad about that at all? Or were you a little sorry? You know what I mean? If you ask them, are you sorry for this? They're going to be like, well, I'm sorry if it offended, sure. You know what I mean? But I don't think he was actually going, he didn't make a statement at the beginning of the interview saying, I want to right away say I'm sorry I disrespected the Chicago Cubs group on my band. Now, he didn't do that shit. And Madden and Theo and the whole Cubs team the next day was like, oh, no, we thought it was great. We don't care.
I understand everything that you just said, and I agree with you. But
that's what I just wanted to make a differential. I didn't want you thinking that David Bodie has the mindset. It was more the interviewer whose mindset I want to change.
Even
Bodie,
yes.
I think Bodie would put up his bet again.
Yes. That's
my point. Sorry about that.
No. I think it's great to make sure that people know that he – but even the question, man, like
– that question needs to go, yes.
Like, why did you ask that? Like
– I don't know. That's so dumb, right?
Have you ever seen clips of Korean baseball?
Oh, my God. They throw that thing 30 feet in the air.
Do you hate it?
No.
No.
I think it looks cool. It always looks cool because it's, I think, Japanese, Korean, Asian baseball as a whole, their style of swing is so much where they almost get a running start in a way, right? Because when they hit it, their weight is already going towards – they still – don't get me wrong. They still do the launch angle because that's just a good swing. And we can talk about launch angle because the Cubs made a move at hitting coach, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But you know what I mean? Like Kosuke Fukudome, who was on the Cubs, and Hideki Matsui, Ichiro was more of a slap hitter, so he not so much. He didn't have it as quite as drastic as these guys did. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I guess when they finished the swing, the way they could flip the bat in the air while already like three steps towards first base looks sexy, damn it. It looks cool. I like it.
Yeah, Griffey would have looked stupid with a bat flip because that thing was just perfection. Like,
it was the walk,
around.
Griffey's walk.
That walk was his bat flip. That was swag.
Yes.
And no one had I don't know if no one had a problem with it. I remember kids, when I was in high school, we would put our hats backwards and our coach would like scream at us. Like, even like, I went to baseball camp when I was like 13. And they're like, I don't give a fuck if Ken Griffey Jr. wears his hat backwards. You can't do it. And that's stuck with me forever because it's like, who was better for baseball in the 90s than Ken Griffey Jr.? Maybe Cal Ripken.
Nobody.
Maybe Cal Ripken. Maybe Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. Griffey was the Michael Jordan of baseball.
He was. He was fantastic. And I almost want to say, Jeter was too. They were talking about the popularity on some show or another recently. And they were talking about how baseball right now, you could say, does not have a top 10 recognizable, meaning transcends the sport type of superstar. Where
they absolutely do not.
So big. They don't. Ken Griffey Jr. was a guy where if you didn't watch baseball at all, like you don't watch the sport one iota, you knew who Ken Griffey Jr. was. You knew who Derek Jeter was. A-Rod too. But right now, I can't think of anybody. Obviously, we want to push Trout because Trout deserves that, but it's just not happening. And that's why I got excited for this commercial because I'm like, ooh, maybe they're going to start to embrace this. Maybe they got – this commercial, if anything, tells me someone's paying attention. Someone who works for MLB is actually paying attention, and maybe they'll figure out how to promote their superstars more often, because it's a bummer. I thought about this with the top 10 athletes, most recognizable athletes in the world. There's definitely not a baseball player in that top 10. And for the first time ever, even though he just lost, you have an MMA fighter in Conor McGregor, who I think ranks like top, they think that he might be like the seventh most recognizable athlete in the world. You got a couple soccer players in there, like three or four NBA players, a couple football players. But it's amazing to me because they used to be you. Albert Pujols at one point, I think the average person would know, but he's so beyond what he was.
Right.
I still can't believe you don't hear it on your.
I'm so sorry.
That sounds killing me right now. It's fine. You know what's going to kill me when I listen to the playback and everyone's like, dude, it sounded fine. I don't know why you kept interrupting. Good
does
talk.
Your,
to bitch about
does,
the sound.
Does your wife know who Mookie Betts is?
No.
Does she know who Kershaw is?
Yes, because we lived in L.A. She would definitely know. And I have his bobblehead on a shelf, so she knows who he is.
What percentage?
He was in an episode of New Girl.
She knows all the Cubs, right? She knows Bryant Rizzo and.
Yes, she knows all the Cubs. She probably doesn't know a few of the newer ones, though.
Does she know Lindor?
She might know if she saw him because of the World Series.
Right, right.
She would know Kipnis more because Kipnis, by the way, got more. Well, no, she wouldn't know. We were in LA still, but all my Chicago friends told me that because Kipnis is from the suburbs of Chicago, that they just could not stop talking about Kipnis's connection to Chicago in Chicago during that World Series. So even though Lindor was their best player, Kipnis got so much more love. But they were talking about this on the radio the other day about how baseball is one of the sports. Hockey probably is too, at least in America. But if you're a football fan and a basket, when your team's out of it, you're still watching the playoffs in those sports. Baseball, if your team's out of it, there's a good chance you're not watching the playoffs anymore. If you're an average casual fan, obviously you and I are. I thought about this, though. I think that's an unfair comparison to blame baseball as a whole for that, because baseball's the longest sport by far. It's 162 games. So after 162 games and your team comes up short or your team sucks and they fail, I get mentally you're like, all right, I can't. I'm over it. I've watched over hundreds of games. Whereas in football, it's once a week. Once a week is such a huge advantage to the point where they own a day. So in January, when it's cold as shit in most of the country, you know what I mean? It's fucking 4 degrees out. What else are you going to do but have a couple beers, eat a bunch of chips and dip, and watch some football with some friends at a house or at a bar? It just makes sense. It works that way. The NBA's playoffs ratings were not good until the finals, and that was just because people like watching LeBron and hating the Warriors. But the regular, like, Browns 1 and 2 of the playoffs were terrible. The ratings sucked. So I think the guy was a little wrong about the NBA there. The NBA's got some problems, too. They might not see it now because superstars drive their league. But when LeBron retires in a few years and the Golden State Warriors keep dominating, they're going to face some fans backlashing and being like, you know what, get this.
Yeah. I mean, the Cubs wildcard game got huge ratings.
Yeah, the Cubs, Yankees, Red Sox. I mean, baseball playoff, but like they're talking about how like in Houston, the Astros versus someone Game 2 didn't get as high of ratings as the Houston Texans facing some shit team that week. I can't remember who the Texans faced, but they were just like, man, the NFL is the NFL, but you wouldn't expect
that's Texas. That's Texas football. Like that's, I think that there's, I know a lot of diehard Astros fans, like whereas I don't know any diehard Brewers fans, that sort of thing. Like, there's Astros fans.
I get the Dallas Cowboys, but the Houston Texans, man, that is like, look, I know it's our instinct as diehard baseball fans to stick up for baseball constantly, but I'm not going to stick up for them in this regard because I believe that Astros playoff game should absolutely get better ratings in the city of Houston than a Texans Week 4 game.
Even after they won the World Series the year before?
Even after. Hell yeah, even after. So, my blame is on Major League Baseball for doing a shitty, shitty job of promoting their sport. And they do. You and I talk about it all the time. I think we're getting defensive a little bit because we love baseball so much. But there's no reason to defend how bad they are at promoting the players they have, especially since they have a lot of exciting-ass players. This is such a good era right now, I think, that we're in with Major League Baseball talent that it should be. I mean, I know the game's a lot of home runs and walks and strikeouts, so there could be a lot of downtime in the pace of play, something that people keep bringing up. And I'm at the point where I want a universal DH, not just because it helps the Cubs, but because, look, things need to change. And people got over it when the DH went to the AL in 1972 or whatever. They'll get over it this time, too. And, yeah, we're going to miss bunting and pitching changes, but it's also going to be way more exciting when, you know, your pitcher could stay in an extra inning, although bullpen is a different thing. But it's also going to be nice when a guy hits a 3-run homer instead of bunting under the second and third.
Right. They should totally do that. Yes, they need to do a better job of promoting their product as exciting. When Manfred is out there talking about pace of play and shit, he is unintentionally branding his own sport as slow and boring. He needs to shut the fuck up and just show exciting shit. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, Show,
I agree with you 100%, man.
Encourage personalities. Encourage a little bit of flair. The game is going Latin. There's the same, like, the old guard people who don't want. There's tinges of shit I don't like about when guys, we've talked about it a million times, when guys don't like, like Latin ball players flair and stuff like that. The game needs to be exciting. The game needs people showing emotion and giving a shit when they do something exciting. I
agree. My I love watching baseball players who have.
Go ahead.
So when we're in the same room, it's better.
Griffey Jr.
I was going to say, I like.
Go ahead.
Son of a bitch, Brian. I was going to say, what I love is, you know, my favorite home run I bring up a few times was the wild card game in 2015 when Schwarber hit that ball into the river because he hit it and then flipped. He did like a little bat flip, not like one in the air, but kind of like a get the fuck off me. And then when he stepped at home, he had this big jacked up, like, let's fucking go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I equate that to the football player who plays baseball. Because football players will literally tackle a guy after he gains 7 yards and celebrate like they won the football. You know what I mean? That's what cracks me up. These same people who want baseball to be this fucking dry toast of a sport are also watching football. And football, to me, I couldn't believe it. I wasn't allowed to play football in grade school, right?
Right.
I lived around the block from a park. The park I lived around the block from in Chicago, Portage Park, had a huge league. And so a lot of my friends would play in it. And literally, the league, I lived so close to the park that I could hear people cheering the games from my window. You know what I mean? So I'd walk over there all the time to see some of my friends. And it was weird to me because I'm like, it was a handoff that gained 3 yards. And everyone on the sidelines is cheering. Like, you'd even get a first down. I couldn't believe it. It was weird to me. I'm like, I can understand getting a first down and cheering. But the way that everyone cheers for every little fucking yard gain, it annoyed me. It actually made me hate football as a kid. So I was like, God, this rah-rah shit is boring. And I remember saying to my friend, I'm like, man, imagine if baseball, they went nuts for every freaking single. Or you hit a ground ball to the right side with a runner on second. Way to get, like, you know, you clap if you're in the stands, but to go nuts, that was weird to me. So I didn't understand how that person is like, yeah, Johnny, you gained 2.5 yards. Way to push the ball, kid. And then it's like, wow. Wow. God, he made a diving stop. Act like you've been there before. I don't get that shit. And to add to that, like, I know you had a point with Griffey and stuff, is there is a whole, we all know this because you and I will talk political stuff off the air. There is a whole huge, I think it's a bigger demographic than we even realize, or segment of this country's population that yearns for a time that never existed.
Right.
Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, these guys were talking shit in the batter's box to the pitcher. Every old-time baseball movie scene shows the pitcher yelling at the batter, let's see you hit this, you yellow belly piece of shit. Huh? Let's see you hit this, you fat motherfucker. Like, you know what I mean?
They were all talking shit. One of the biggest and most famous myths in baseball lore is Babe Ruth calling his shot.
Yeah, instead he was saying this ball's going up your fucking nose.
But
That's what a lot of people really think it was. Because he pointed at the pitcher saying this ball's going up your ass or something like that. They talked so much shit.
What would they do now if Yasiel Puig called his shot?
I know. Talk about cocky, right? Well, the fact that he did it, people are like, oh, it's cool. It's fine. He did it. It's cool with trash talk as long as you back it up. I'm cool with trash talk regardless. I'm fine with it regardless. I really am. Obviously, there's some things you don't want to cross the line with here and there. Obviously, with the McGregor-Khabib stuff, if you guys are UFC fans, there's some stuff. It's like, you know. But even that's another podcast, I feel like. But, Bruce, Cobb, Tris Speaker, Hornsby, all of these dudes were talking trash. They were sharpening their spikes. They were doing all sorts of dirty stuff they could do. Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, biggest fucking shit talkers of all time. Jordan, obviously, a huge trash talker. This is what they do. And if they're like, well, that's okay. I just don't want to see them, you know, hitting a home run and watching it. I'm like, why not? Those pitchers used to stare guys down. I ever tell you about Nolan Ryan and Andre Dawson, that kind of story?
Yeah.
Have you heard this? Nolan Ryan used to, if you hit a home run off of him, he would circle the mound giving you, like, watching you. Like, he would watch you as you went around the base, giving you a hard-ass look. And as if to say, like, you better fucking keep running. If I see you enjoying this or smiling, you're getting fastball to the face the next time out. That's like Nolan Ryan psycho stuff. Which, again, though, I'm actually still okay with that.
No,
don't hit someone in the face. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Don't hit him in the face. If you want to hit him in the butt for whatever reason, fine. I'm all right with that. But the one person he didn't do it to was Andre Dawson. When Dawson hit a home run off him, he stood on the mound because he said he had too much damn respect for that guy. Because he knew what Dawson went through to get ready for a game because he had such bad knees and stuff like that. And just how he just liked the way Dawson played the game. So when Dawson cranked one off him in a game once, and he just stood and kind of like gave him like a little hat tip, being like, all right, you got me. You got me. You know what I mean? Because it's how you handle loss, I guess. So that's why, I guess when a pitcher hits a batter, he's kind of being like a sore loser because it's like, oh, the guy hit a home run off you. Why don't you just strike him out to get him back? But you can't. I'm okay with the hitting the guy because to me it's almost like kiss my dick. It's like, or back off the plate or whatever. But I guess the better revenge would be to strike him out the next time.
Yeah, I mean, like when college teams run up the score, people are like, that's unsportsmanlike. It's just like, that's life. You want to stop them? Like, could you stop them? Why don't you be sportsmanlike and be competitive?
Yeah.
Why is
I don't know how I feel about running up the score, though. It's a different issue, I feel like.
Life runs up the score.
True. It does. I mean, hey, tax cuts for the rich.
That's running up the score.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I just think the reason I don't like running up the score is because if a good player gets injured because you're stealing second base when you're up by 8 runs, then you deserve what's coming to you.
And that's fair. That's also a good reason to not do it. But if your reason to not do it is because it's not fair, fuck you. It's a sport. Also, like, why is it?
If a team's up, so Boston beat the Yankees. Not mean to cut you off. You're onto something here. That's why I want to stick to this real quick. But if Boston beats when Boston beat the Yankees, what was it, 19-1?
16-1.
They killed. So say when they were up 13-1, Betts leads off the inning with a triple. He gets a triple. Hey, he ran hard. He got those 3 bases. It's cool. You don't need to stop at second. You got your 3. Shallow fly ball to left. He's like, I could beat this. But instead, he decides not to do it. He's just going to stay at third. Are you okay with that? Or are you thinking, nah, fuck that. You should have went for the plate.
I mean, who knows? A little bit of that is kind of like, yeah, win the game or whatever, but I don't know. It's like that. Why? Exert,
I don't know. I'm just curious.
Why exert yourself when it's in like Brock Holt's cycle? You know, like I wanted to hit a home run that last time. It's just like, well, I don't know, man. Like,
I hear you, man. You know, it's just an interesting conversation. We could save a lot of this for the offseason. Maybe we should get around to predicting the. All right, so we were. Not right on one series, but right on the other 3.
I was horrible. I did it.
Well, I said, yeah, go ahead, you first.
I thought that the Indians were going to be competitive. Like the Indians bats never showed up. They got outscored 21-6 in that series. Colin Verlander blew that Indians staff that I was hyping up out of the water. Kluber was horrible. And the Astros decided to hit 1 billion home runs.
Yeah, that was bad. I mean, that home field in Houston helped a lot, but that didn't matter. It didn't matter, you know. Cleveland just was outmatched in every possible way. I, like you, predicted Cleveland to win. I actually think I said I thought both NL series would go 5 games. I was wrong because the Brewers swept the Rockies, which they should. The Rockies weren't very good, and it hurts even more because – our Cubs got beat by them in a long-ass game. I thought the Dodgers would win in 5. They won in 4. And then I said, I'm pretty sure I said Cleveland in 4. And I said Boston in 4, which I was right about Boston in 4. But, yeah, I was surprised Cleveland just, they looked abysmal. They were garbage.
I feel like that franchise, man, like that, I don't know if that game 7 took something out of them. I don't know if. Maybe they can come out with, like, Chief Wahoo's gone. And last year after they won 21 games in a row and then got beat, like, I feel bad for that franchise. I do. And I
was rooting for them. I wanted them to win it all this year.
I know that Jose Ramirez had a really bad series. I don't understand why a team with that much talent can't knock off a hot Astros team. I feel like the Astros are severely overrated. Altuve did not have the type of year that he did last year to still warrant this like MVP chance from the crowd. I don't think that he deserved the MVP last year. I would have given it to Aaron Judge. They get credit for tanking and then getting star players. They got Carlos Correa, who you could argue is one of the most overrated players in Major League Baseball. They bought Verlander and they bought Gerrit Cole. So all of that tanking bullshit is them rebuilding off of purchased aces. And
well, they traded for them though.
But I mean, it's not homegrown. What I, my point is that it's not.
I'm just saying though, because well, here's the thing though. I definitely want to put this out there. Trading for players, I think, is part of a rebuild because you're building up prospects in order to flip them for proven commodities. That's important. I've always told. I used to get into it with fans back in the day where I'm like, I have a friend who's a diehard Sox fan. He used to always say, I don't care about prospects, trade them all. And I go, the problem is you can't trade them all because then when you're going to need some, obviously, to fill in some spots. But it's important to have a good farm system because then you could get those guys to push you over the edge. Like so many, every year a team, every time a team wins, for the most part, they made some in-season trade that kind of pushed them over the edge.
Right, that's the thing now.
Yeah, like Verlander last year with Houston, Chapman with the Cubs the year before, Ben Zobrist for the Royals the year before that. That's just kind of how it's built. I think it's a long-ass season. You could go into the season thinking, oh, we got our squad, but you never know what's going to happen. Now, let me ask you this, though, because I did want to give them some credit because they had the – you know, they built the farm. I also think you're right about the tanking thing with the Astros because the Astros, their tank was longer than the Cubs. The Cubs' rebuild didn't start until Theo. Some people might be like, well, they had a first-round pick with Bias. That wasn't a rebuild. They were trying to win that year. They were just bad. There's a difference.
Yeah.
People forget that. I heard Cubs fans saying, we've been rebuilding.
They weren't strategically bad.
Yes. I've heard old-ass dumb Cub fans say, well, the team's been rebuilding since 1908. I'm like, no, they have not. Okay? Rebuilding means you are stripping everything down, and that's what they did, essentially. They traded the aging veterans for new young assets, and player development was put more money into and all that stuff. Houston, though, I remember Brian Kenny, and I even called him on it, and then he agreed with me. He actually responded to the tweet saying, yes, of course, the Cubs as well, because you kept bragging about the Astros front office and some other team in front office too. And I was like, you know, they did botch two drafts, essentially, the Marco Paul thing, and then they missed on Chris Bryant. Like, there was one or two drafts there where I'm pretty sure they screwed up. And in the midst of it, remember they won the wild card, then the next year didn't make the playoffs, and then the next year won the World Series? They didn't make the playoffs in 2016.
Yes.
So it's not quite like the Cubs, where the Cubs started their draft. It took them 3 years to get to the playoffs under that draft. They had 3 years of tanking.
Well,
2015 made the playoffs.
Well, whoever – it's interesting to me that whoever wins the World Series becomes the standard bearer for how to be successful in baseball. If you really think about it, the 2015 Royals, a constant like contact team with a great defense and bullpen, throughout 2016, that became the mantra of everybody. You just have to win 88 games. That was the thing after 2014. Just win 88 games, blah, 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 blah. Then the Cubs won. Then it was like tank and rebuild. Then it was the Astros one, and it's like more tank and rebuild and blah, blah, blah. Whoever wins becomes the standard bearer for what everybody should be doing, the standard for everything. And whoever wins this year, whether it be, any of the final four teams, especially if it's the fucking Brewers, that will be the thing that everybody decides is what you do after you win. The Astros won in seven games. It could have just as easily been the Dodgers winning last year, and everybody would talk about how teams with big markets have an unfair advantage.
Yeah, over 200, they look at $220 million payroll last year. That's a very good point. Yeah, there's always the Brewers winning could kind of remind me of Kansas City in a way because we're back, everybody. Pick up there. I'm not sure where we left off, but I know I wanted to add to this. You talked about Astros players, but we're talking about rebuilds and all that kind of stuff. And you're right, there's always a changing narrative for that. Ignore that stuff. Like the Cubs won in 2016. They didn't follow the Royals model. You know what I mean? Obviously, they improved their defense from 2015 by adding Hayward. and they did some different stuff with, oh, they wanted more contact. I think a balanced approach is always the way to go. Ideally, you want a team that develops their own talent, because that's more of a surefire way of winning. Every team that's ever won usually has a nice crop of hitters that they brought up themselves. Then you want to supplement that with free agency. Like, that's kind of what the Cubs did. You know, they were like, all right, we got Rizzo, Bryant, Baez, Addison Russell now, Kyle Schwarber. We got all these young studs, Wilson Contreras. Now we're going to go out and sign John Lester. Now we're going to go out
right.
and sign this guy. We're going to trade for, you know, some young pitchers that we're going to develop, like a Jake. You know what I mean? There's a good balance to do it. But if you think this team was all bullpen and speed and we need to be all bullpen speed, you're wrong, because by the time you get your team figured out that way, it's a new thing. You mentioned that Altuve and Correa are overrated. Now, do you mean this season they're overrated, or do you mean throughout their careers they've been overrated?
I feel like chanting MVP at Jose Altuve in 2018 is ridiculous.
Yes. He had a 4.8 war. He had a lot of statistics that were down from previous years. I mean, he's still a good season. Don't get me wrong.
He had a great – he's fine. But
Correa was a big down year. I mean, there were some injuries there, but still.
Yeah, and I think that Correa is their held-up example of why tanking wins championships, in my opinion. Because they landed Carlos Correa, who in 2016 people were already talking about, is he the best player in baseball? I remember these conversations. And it's insanity. Carlos Correa is a great young player who's not what they're holding him up to be. Francisco Lindor is the reputation of Carlos Correa. They came up the same year. Lindor got second in Rookie of the Year voting to Correa, who ended up being the superstar.
Yeah.
Altuve is a base stealing. They like him because he's like a little guy.
Yeah, he's kind of guy. But you know what, though? I embrace that. I think that's cool. Like, teams digging people for whatever reason. Kevin Mitchell was loved because he was a big fat guy back in the late 80s. There's always that kind of, not little, but, you know, there's little things about certain players that people gravitate towards.
There's a little guy in that infield who's better than all of them.
Bregman's amazing. He's their best player. This past season, do you bet on Bregman being the best player going forward?
Oh, I actually do.
You do? Okay. Yes. Because up until this year, Bregman was not their best player.
No. And in fact, you'd probably talk about Springer.
I'm a fan of Springer.
That's like Mr. October right there.
Yeah, he's a gamer. And but, you know, like, Baez was clearly the Cubs' best player this past year. Do you still bet on Baez to be the best player going forward?
You know, that's a great fucking question.
Because I think Chris Bryant rebounds.
Right.
I think Baez is going to be consistently what he's doing. I don't think this is a flash in the pan for Baez. I don't think this is like Baez had this amazing MVP caliber season, and now he's going to go back to being, you know, like a borderline all-star. I think Baez is still going to be – I think Baez is now officially going forward going to be a guy – that is going to hit you 30 home runs and play fantastic defense and base running. I think that's what he's going to be going forward.
Because I think your question is Baez going to consistently be better than Bryant? I don't think that your question is, are the Cubs getting Harper or Machado? And then that would change my answer.
Oh, that would. No, yeah, I wasn't thinking about that. Obviously, if they had one of those two guys, then it changes. My question is Baez going to be better than Bryant the way Baez was this past year? The same way I'm asking, is Bregman better than Altuve and Correa going forward the way he was this year, which is, I mean, it's a different skill set. And Bregman was a first round pick too. People forget that.
Yeah. I'm going to go with, I think yes, Bregman going forward is better than Altuve. I am not as convinced that in my own argument against Correa though. I think the ceiling on Correa is still worth talking about. But I don't think that he has ended up being what they're calling him. Like, I've read articles, like Time Magazine has articles about the Astros and how their front office is ingenious and how it's like the smartest thing that they ever did was tank so they could get star players like Carlos Correa. And I'm just like, are you watching the games to figure out, or are you just going with the narrative? That's my, one of my least favorite things in baseball is when teams just, and announcers especially, just pick a narrative, whether it be the 1908 Cubs, as if that has any, or the even year Giants.
Yeah.
As if that has any, we don't live in fucking Westeros, man. like as if that has any bearing on the mindset of a 23-year-old left fielder when he's up to bat. 1908.
Yeah, I know. No, that always killed me.
They asked Acuna what he thought of being the youngest player to hit a grand slam in the postseason, and he'd never heard of Mickey Mantle. Wrap your fucking mind around that.
I believe that though.
He goes. I think that that was before I was born.
Yeah,
Acuna definitely. Was born in 1998.
Oh my God, was he really?
Yes.
Oh God.
Acuna was born in 98.
Was Soto born in 2000?
Oh, sorry. Acuna was 97. Soto was 98. I apologize. I get them confused.
Oh yeah.
In my head, they're both like rookie.
But they're within a yes. year. So we're a few years in the year 2000s being activated. Yes.
Jeez. And to think that
remember
these,
when Castro was the first
guys...
player from the 90s? That's nuts.
Was he really?
Starlin Castro was the first player born in the 90s in Major League Baseball.
There was a player for the Blue Jays whose name was like Junior Felix or something. And he was born in the 80s. And he was like, and I remember my babysitter thinking that was like the most amazing thing that she'd ever heard. That there was a player already in the major leagues who was born in the 80s. That's how old I am.
Oh my God. Well, we're all going to die one day, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, so this series, though, we've got Boston versus Houston. Who do you like?
I don't like the Red Sox right now. I'll tell you that much. I feel like if they don't blow you out, their bullpen is going to lose the game for them unless Chris Sale is their bullpen. They're top-heavy in their rotation. I have no idea why David Price keeps that spot in the rotation other than you don't trust Eovaldi and Porcello and whoever else that they have. They won 16-1, and they almost lost the other games, if I'm not wrong about that.
No, I think you're right about that. Well, they held on to win 5-3 one game, and then I think 4-2 the other. But, yeah, and then when the one they lost, pretty good. You're right. The rotation is very top-heavy. I don't get David Price. If I'm a Red Sox fan, I don't feel confident in that dude at all. Man, I don't know. It's just –
which, based on my projections from before the series, that means that the Red Sox are about to win the World Series.
Well, yeah, exactly. If it tells us anything. David Price, I'm looking at David Price's numbers right now. Losses when you're on a team that won 110 games, because obviously everyone has good wins and losses. People forget, like, when the Cubs won 103 games, our number five starter, Jason Hamill, who didn't even make the playoff roster, was 15-6 or something like that. So
yeah,
another example of why you really can't look at wins and losses. Let's see here. K's per nine, solid. Walks, not terrible. He's at 9 K's an inning, 2.56 walks. All right, let's get into the funner stuff, more fun stuff. ERA 3.58, David Price. Okay, let's see what the FIP is, though. 4.02, which, again, actually is terrible for the American League, but still much higher, a little higher than you want it to be.
Price in 2016 is the reason that I went back to making sure that I looked at someone's ERA and not just their FIP, because I felt like the Price in 2016 had a fantastic FIP. You have it in front of you, I'm assuming, but he had a bad ERA, and that wasn't his fielders. I felt like he was getting rocked, and I felt like there was a difference between getting rocked and having like a disparity between your FIP and your ERA that was not your fault. I felt like that was his fault.
His ERA was 3.99, and his FIP was 3.60, which a FIP in the mid-threes to me is very good.
Oh, so it evened out, I guess. It evened out, but at one point in the season.
At one point, it was way like higher. But right. You know what, though? Right. That's rare, though. It's rare. Normally, the ERA is less than the fifth, depending. The fact that his ERA was 3.99 tells me he had poor defense behind
him. Wait, the ERA less than the fifth?
Yeah, usually.
Huh. I don't agree.
Really? Because every time I look, I see a guy who has an ERA that's like 3.50, but then his fifth is like 4.25.
Oh.
You really? Okay. Well, I'll just look at
what's
one,
well,
I'll look at one
me,
player. I'll look at one player right here. Okay. I'm looking at David Price. Okay, one, two, except for all right. Well, he's
Give me
it's
a,
every
give
other
me a
year
Chris
for him.
Sale, give me a Chris Sale FIP versus ERA, or give me a Justin Verlander.
I'm not kidding you, man. Most of the time, I look, I find that the because FIP is what's supposed to be what it's truly supposed to be. So, wouldn't the FIP usually be higher?
Well, on like a power pitcher, like
I guess power
on
pitchers
an
are different.
On a power right. pitcher, which is what a lot of the top guys are
as far
doing
as war,
right now.
Yeah.
That's it's usually the FIP is lower. Basically, if you're good, your FIP is lower.
No, well, if you're good, you're supposed to have a FIP that's in a certain range. I feel like, but your ERA typically might be a little bit higher. I don't know. I'll never forget this. I remember Matt Latos started this year with the Sox a couple years ago. He started like 5-0 or 6-1 or something. And his ERA was like 0.89. And I went over and I looked and his FIP was 5. And I go, well, this isn't going to last. He's clearly going to get rocked pretty soon.
Yeah.
His ERA is way lower than his FIP.
You and Lester had the same thing this year at the All-Star.
Yes.
Break.
Lester, this thing, I mean, Hendrick's ERA and FIP were about even, but I'm looking at Sale, and you're right. Sale's ERA is always a little bit higher. Not always. There's a couple years where it's about even. But for the most part, like this year, his ERA was 2.11. His FIP was 1.98. 2.90, 2.45, 3.34, 3.46. So that time it was the other way. 3.41, 2.73, 2.17, 2.57. Like, you know.
Yeah, I think that.
The Sox had historically bad defense behind him a lot of those years. But
right.
You're right.
And
the strikeout
so
guys are different. FIP favors strikeout guys because, you know, it takes the fielding out of the equation. We've gone over that. But, yeah, you're right. I think maybe whenever I look at FIP, I'm looking on ball type guys just to see what's what.
Yeah.
It depends what you're looking
at. That makes sense. And most guys are not, like, heavy strikeout guys, hence not being at the top of, like, a war list or, like, a top of, like a Fangraphs type list where I'm like, who's killing it right now?
Well, that was amazing about 2016 Kyle Hendricks. 2016 Kyle Hendricks was like eighth or ninth in WAR, and his I gotta look at him real quick. Let's look at Kyle Hendricks 2016 very quickly. Oh come on, I'm typing with one hand here. Well, make a pick. Tell me how many games you think the series is gonna go and who's gonna win. I know you got Houston. Be bold. Go for it while I look this up.
Houston in five.
Ooh, that is bold. All right, 20.
They have like a pretty good percentage to win that series, I believe, on like 538. 538 has been doing actually like pretty like accurate predictions. And on the surface of it, it didn't make sense to me that they were favored so much more heavily over Cleveland, but it shows what I fucking do. Cleveland got destroyed in that. Like, I really thought that the Yankees had an advantage if Aaron Judge had a good series. Aaron Judge had a pretty great postseason, and the Yankees, like, got blown out and then couldn't make full comebacks off of Boston's horrible bullpen.
That's why I see the Yankees getting Patrick Corbin in the offseason, because they need way more pitching. 538, interesting enough. Should just stick to baseball and keep their asses out of politics because they were horribly wrong in 2016. Anyhow,
but they're pulling national numbers in
all the polls are wrong. I know, and they even say it's just, you know, there's a whole book called The Signal and the Noise. Like, this isn't always going to be right, but most of the time,
come on,
you know?
They national polling, they were correct. However, it doesn't run on national polling, it runs on the Electoral College.
Yeah, but even national polling had her winning by more than 3 million votes overall. And Electoral College is what 538 does. Because 538 That's what I like about their site, is because they got the electoral map right there when you go to it during election season, and you can highlight the states. And it's kind of a fun little interactive game you could kind of play.
I want to take back what I just said and erase it from everyone's memory. The name of their website kind of proves me wrong.
Yeah, it's literally called 538 to get the number of electoral votes.
Oh my That's god! Great. I'm gonna go.
No, we're keeping that in there.
I'm gonna go jump off a second story building.
You'll survive though. You'll just break an ankle. All right, I'm gonna go bold then. I'm gonna go Red Sox in seven. I think they're gonna find a way to eke it out. I wanted to be different from you too, because we said the same shit for the first two rounds.
Good.
I see your points though, but I'm gonna go bold and say Red Sox in seven. And I'll start off the NLCS. I'm gonna go Dodgers in six.
Interesting. What do you think about Kershaw's performance in game two of the first series?
He looked fantastic. He had a better playoff run overall last year. I know he had that one World Series where he pitched two games in the World Series. One was good, one was bad, right?
Yeah, are we done with that narrative, or are we continuing that narrative?
I think it's a narrative until the numbers show elsewise, right?
I mean,
I don't know.
Okay.
I think he's another star. If they win the World Series this year, I think the narrative dies.
Okay.
But to me, it's tough because I think the overall body of work has to overdo it. Like, I mean, basketball is a different sport, but I remember when LeBron finally won one, people were like, all right, that narrative is over about him being a choker. And I'm like, well, you can't erase defeat though. Because he's always going to have LeBron James always had that series against Dallas where he choked his ass off. And I guess basketball is different than baseball. See, let me just add this real quick. Basketball and football are sports that are athletically based, meaning the average fan and the average person, this isn't knocking, like I'm more of a positive guy these days, but the average person isn't that bright. So it's easy for them to be like, try harder, where baseball is a sport of pure skill. I mean, obviously you have to be athletic too. And the best players usually are very, very athletic. But if Mike Trout is slumping, which is so rare, I think he'd have an 0-for-20 streak this year. You can't just be like, dude, what the fuck? Try harder, because that's not how it works with baseball.
Right.
You know? And if Kershaw, like, I think with pitching, you could get mentally messed up and just start missing the strike zone. Where in basketball, if you're an amazing passer and you start throwing the ball into the stands, or you just stop taking shots because you're scared, that's choking. You can't deny that. Because
yeah, baseball
where you can just take over at any given moment. You can't take over at any given moment in baseball.
Most of baseball is free throws.
Yes. Good analogy. It's a mental game.
Or field goals.
Yes. It's a very mental game. And hockey's a skilled game like that too, where a player could just be going wrong for a little bit, like a shot's a little off, or, you know, there's finesse to those two sports, where football and basketball, like, if a running back slumps, it's because his offensive line is usually getting bad. As long as the hole's there, you're still going to be fast enough to hit it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if a quarterback starts throwing interceptions because his passes are terrible, then you could say, okay, there's something going on with you, where maybe you need to get in the gym a little bit more or whatever. But baseball, to me, is free throws. You can't, like, there's hitting coaches who say you can't just go to the cages and get yourself out of a slump. You got to get your mind right. It's about your approach. And that's a perfect segue into this. We made our predictions for the series. Although, what'd you say for the Dodgers? Do you have the Brewers winning or the Dodgers winning? Just
Dodgers
real quick,
in
how many games?
Dodgers in seven.
Okay, cool. So we can see who's wrong about the right on that series with games, and we'll see what team wins in the AL, who's got bragging rights there.
Who did you say? Who did you say? You said Brewers?
I said Dodgers in six. You said Dodgers in seven.
Got it. So it'll be Brewers in four.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. The Brewers are never going to lose again, as we've already witnessed.
Yeah.
But let's just wrap up the podcast on this. The Cubs have fired hitting coach Chili Davis after one season. The Cubs' offense in the first half looked very good. Second half, just bad. Home runs were down big time. Walks were down. And if you're not going to get on base and hit home runs, you're going to struggle. And I kind of felt like Theo Epstein hinted at something like this during the press conference he had, in which he said, launch angle is not a fad. Now, a tweet I read yesterday was also saying that it was the players' exit interviews were too hard to ignore and a change had to be made. The Cubs do a thing where at the end of every season, even when they won the World Series, they did this, At the end of every season, they have exit interviews with the players where they talk to them about the season they had, what they thought they could have done to do better themselves, what they thought the organization could have helped them better with, and what they want to do going forward and what the organization sees from them going forward. Which is, you know, I think is a really cool thing they do, actually. And I guess the consensus from the players were that they did not like Chile as a hitting coach. They think he caused more harm than good. And so that's enough to be like, you're out. And then there's always going to be those people who are like, well, the hitting coach doesn't hit. I don't get the fans who are like that. I mean, clearly stuff, people need to get fired then. Okay, what, should we give lifetime appointments to the Supreme Court? We have a coach. Here he is forever. You know what I mean? Like, clearly some guys are better than others. I don't think they matter as much as fans make it out to believe. I don't think the manager means as much as we as fans think it affects the wins and loss column. But clearly there's something that goes to be said if players hate the guy or if they're not producing. And, you know, changes need to be made.
It's such a stupid argument. Why do you think that a guy has that job title if he doesn't hit, and that's your fucking argument, then why have the job? Why does the job exist?
Exactly. I think to me, a good hitting coach obviously can't, you know, turn them all into all-stars immediately. But what a good hitting coach does is help with approach. Now, in the first half, I don't know if he got off of that or what happened or if it was he over-preached and because of that, it fucked up their swings. I don't know. But there was a stretch there from, I want to say, mid-May to the all-star break where I felt very confident in the Cubs offense. They would have the random game where they got shut out, but you saw a better approach. That approach went to shit in the second half. And and maybe that is on Chili Davis, because how many times do we see the Cubs swing at bullshit curveballs and turn them over for ground balls where a fastball right down the middle they took, in which that was the pitch they could have drove. Now, obviously you want to be selective, but the thing is, you want to be selectively aggressive, meaning when you get your pitch, you fucking swing. It's not just take, and then, okay, I got two strikes on me now. Like Kyle Schwarber, to me, I was actually surprised he had a 3.2 WAR on the year. I thought he was going to have like a 4-5 WAR season at one point, because I remember at the beginning of June, he had like a 270 average. His on base was like 380, slugging about 520. His OPS was like, and I'm like, this is the Schwarber I've been looking for. He's on pace for 40 home runs at one point during the first half of the season. I think he had like 17 home runs in early June. I don't know.
And then his first half was all-star.
Yes, he was. He should have been an all-star. What killed me about him in the second half was like, dude, every time he walked into the batter's box, I felt like he had two strikes on him. And it was because stop missing your pitch, dude. If you get that pitch, you got to fucking attack it. And I don't
know what's weird.
Then he would turn his hands over on outside breaking shit and hit weak little ground balls back to the pitcher, the second baseman. I saw too much of that. The approach to me is what a good hitting coach does. A good hitting coach goes,
man,
here's what this pitcher likes to do, and here's how we're going to attack him. The number of times.
You know what it was? You know what it was? That fucking home run derby sent him and Harper in opposite directions.
Because Harper had an amazing second half.
Yeah. If Harper's dad hadn't cheated, Schwarber would have kept going and Harper would have had a mediocre season. But instead, they switched bodies like Freaky Friday because Bryce Harper's black beard father is a goddamn cheater. And he would look good in a Cubs uniform.
Well, then that's obviously the answer. The answer to a Cubs hitting coach problem is to get Bryce Harper. Because now that Gregorius is having Tommy John surgery and he's going to be out. So the rumor is that the Yankees are going to go hard after Machado. I want Machado or Harper, either one I'm happy with. I think I prefer Machado a little bit, but I'd still be ecstatic if the Cubs added Harper.
And, the Yankees need to go after pitching.
They might do both, and they can. And that's why the world is unfair.
Like, well, dude, okay.
They're going to get Corbin and Machado. Who knows, though? I think the Cubs have a good chance of anybody. The Phillies apparently are going to be major players. We'll save all that stuff for the offseason. We gave you our predictions on the NL and ALCS. We hope you guys are having a fun time watching this October. Maybe we should do a contest in the offseason where we could come up with fun ways that the listeners could help us with cool new ways to promote Major League Baseball. And in turn, we'll be promoting our podcast at the same time. So everyone's happy there.
Yay.
Brian Stein, tell them where to find yourself.
Type my name in to Google.
Yeah, type his name into Google. You'll find Mike Bryant. There's no other Mike Bryant Stein. And maybe there's one that's like a dentist somewhere in Nebraska or something. There's other Joe Kilgallens, but just type in comedy next to you'll find me, kids. I'm all over the place, killing on the Instagram, I feel like, lately. And we'll talk about who we think the Cubs next week. We can make predictions on a new hitting coach for the Cubs. We'll give suggestions. And then we'll be halfway into the NL and ALCS. The podcast came out late this week because we're at a weird crossroads where we're like, are we going to drop a podcast just to preview game 4 of one series?
Right.
You know, it just didn't make sense. And game 4 of two series is what would have came out at that time. Dodgers and then the Braves and then, of course, Boston, New York. Which is cool that that rivalry is back. The Yankees are going to have to step it up next year, though, because that series was pretty boring overall. And then we're going to do fun stuff throughout the – I think we'll probably in the off season scale it back a little, but then I think we'll do some ones that are all history of the game. What do you think, Brian? Does that sound fun?
You know me. Yeah, I mean –
because me and you could do an hour on one topic, and the only reason we've held back sometimes is because we're like, okay, dude, it's been 45 minutes – on whether or not a pitcher could win MVP. Yeah. And we haven't talked about anything that's going on in the game right now.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely do some winter meeting stuff and then some
hot stove
action, baby. And maybe we'll do some fun TBTs for you too. Throw back to this date and that date and all sorts of fun shit like that. I got plans, my friends. I got plans. And we thank you for listening. This has been Comedians Talking Baseball.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.